This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show.
Oh my gosh, this is going to be my, this is a my favorites episode, and it's my favorite list of artists or entertainers or whatever you want to call them, who, because of artistic integrity, they wanted to be authentic. They turned down millions of dollars when I honestly don't think I would have made that decision. Like everyone always says, oh, you know, be yourself. Don't sell out. Don't do things just for the money. You do need money to live. And as much as, I mean, I feel like a lot of my writing I do with artistic integrity, or I hope I do. But some of these decisions I'm about to tell you are just incredible to me. So we're going to talk about, well, first I'll talk about Jewel, the singer. And then we're going to talk about Sylvester Stallone, Seinfeld, and a few others. My favorite actor, Seinfeld. So first off, Jewel, she was on my podcast, and I admit I was kind of a little bit in love. You can't help it. She's very cute. And that's sexist, I know, but I couldn't help it. And I do think she's a wonderful singer, though. I really am a big fan. That's why I wanted her on my podcast. And I admire a lot of things about her. But in particular, something she told me during the podcast blew my mind. So she had a hard life as a child. She was abused. She went from house to house. She lived in a barn for a while. She was homeless for a while. And ultimately, she was homeless in, I believe it was Venice Beach, California. And every day she would like basically, I don't know, sleep on the beach or sleep wherever homeless people sleep. Or she slept in her car. That's it. She slept in her car. And every day there was this one diner that she would sing in. And a crowd her singing was so beautiful. She's 19 years old. Her singing was so beautiful that a crowd started to develop every day. And it would get bigger and bigger and bigger. And eventually, this is LA. People in the entertainment industry would heard about this amazing singer in this diner, and you know the music industry would show up and listen. So one time, a record label, and this is, again, she is living in her car, and a record label said, we'll do an album for you. We'll give you $1 million advance, $1 million. You're homeless. You need to take this $1 million. And she thought about it, and she said no. Jay, would you have said no? You're homeless. You have no money in the bank, and you have this talent. You're right. 19 years old because you have your whole life ahead of you. Would you have taken $1 million there?
No, like $1 million. If you say, hey Jay, I'm gonna give you $1 million to slap your best friend, I would do it instantly.
Right? Like, what wouldn't you do for $1 million?
Nothing. $1 million is a lot of money.
Yeah. So like if I said to you, Jay, you have to move to Montana for 3 years, would you do that?
Oh yeah.
For $1 million?
For $1 million? I mean, like that means like, do you cover all the housing expenses as well? Like
No, I have to. I'm just going to give you $1 million. You think there's expensive houses in Montana? You think rent is expensive in Montana?
Well, but I just want to make sure I get my $1 million worth. Like, I have to get the clean $1 million.
Okay. To make sure that you're not going to be wasting too much money in Montana for $1 million, let me just find rent for you here. I'm going to find rent in Montana. Okay. Okay, Jay, here's a 2-bedroom apartment for $975 a month.
Yeah, $975 a month. Let's say $1,000 a month.
What are you paying now for your studio in New York City?
$2,600.
Okay, here's another 2-bedroom for $1,025. I think you're gonna do okay, particularly since you work remote. So, you know, here's a 2-bedroom for $550 a month. You think you'll go broke on $1 million?
No, but you know, like when you say $1 million means I get $1 million just for the challenge, you know? I didn't have to spend extra money for the challenge.
I mean, here's a townhouse, 3 bedrooms, okay? $995 a month in Missoula, Montana, which is a pretty happening town, I might add. Right. How many square feet is your apartment?
I think it's like less than 600.
Okay. Here's 1,848 square feet in Bozeman, Montana for $1,800 a month.
Right.
With $1 million, you could stay there for 500 months.
Right. If there's any, you know, Montana's official listening to this, make sure you sponsor the podcast.
Right.
The
James Alder Show. The James Alder Show, sponsored by the state of Montana. I don't even know who the governor of Montana is.
I don't really know anything about Montana.
You know my theory, which I've said before on this podcast, which is that they should never have put, look, I'm Jewish and whatever they, in 1948, the Jews were in really bad shape after World War II, of course, and they wanted their own country just to be safe. Why did they put them in the middle of the Middle East where every other country hates them and goes to war against them constantly? They should have put the Jewish country in Montana. There's so much land in Montana. It's an enormous state. You just put them. Israel is like the size of 1/100th of Montana. They could have, and everybody could have been living in $600 a month, 5-bedroom apartments, and we would have had all the Jews hanging out in Montana, building like, that would have been like the Silicon Montana area. At least North Dakota and Idaho wouldn't be going to war against them constantly. So that would be a drag. So can you imagine if North Dakota, like the Dakotas, just really hate Israel and Montana? It's like, why did they give them Montana? Anyway, enough of that. So here's why Jewel did it. Here's why she returned out $1 million. She had a very offbeat style. It wasn't like a pop kind of style. And she was afraid that there would be too much pressure on her to sell like millions of copies. And then the record label would dump her and her career would be over. So she was honest. At the age of 19, she was mature enough to be worried about her artistic integrity and to be worried about her long-term career. I mean, she has a career forever now. And here's what she said to me. She said, don't write for the masses, write for yourself. And then I said, isn't there a tension there? Like, what if you write for yourself and then nobody likes it? Don't you want to write something that people like? And she said, we all have common experiences. Ultimately, when you write for yourself, you tap into that common cultural experience we all share. And that is such good advice for an artist. An artist, the key to good art, the key to being a good artist is to figure out who you are. In fact, there's a chapter in my book coming out, Skip the Line. It's called, Who Are You? Why Are You? How Are You? And I explain what these three questions mean and how it helps figure out who you are, whether you're an artist or a businessman or an entrepreneur or whatever. You have to have your own unique voice. She was afraid her voice would be dictated to her by the record label, so she turned down the million albums. Since then, she signed with another record label, and she sold 30 million albums after that. And so, you know, she said she started writing every day, journaling, writing the lyrics to her future songs. And I found that every time I wrote, she's saying this, I found that every time I wrote, it reduced my anxiety, even when I was living in my car. So money doesn't solve the problems, but finding your authentic artistic integrity ideally will. And that's something I should remember. That's something everybody should remember. And artistic integrity doesn't just mean like a singer or a movie star. It could be a businessman. It could be an entrepreneur. But, you know, stick to your vision, but make sure it's really your unique vision and it's something you passionately care about, which obviously she did. So next on my list, Sylvester Stallone. And it's not just that he turned down money. He had a tough life. I don't think a lot of people know this. I don't know. Obviously, you know who Sylvester Stallone is, right? Like Rocky and Rambo and all that.
Sure. Yep.
And so did you know that when he was, when his mom was in labor with him, there were complications during the labor. So the lower left side of Sylvester Stallone's face is completely paralyzed since birth, including parts of his tongue, lip, chin. And so that's part of the reason he has kind of this weird way of speaking. And it looks like his chin is a little off. Yeah. So he literally, part of his face is paralyzed. Did you know that?
Yeah. That's one of the famous story out there about him, I think.
I never knew that until I was preparing for this.
About him.
Okay, really? Did you know this? I didn't know this.
Really?
Did you know that when he was, he didn't have any income, he didn't have a job, So he responded to a casting call for a pornography film. He got $200 for 2 days of filming a softcore pornography film. Did you know that?
That I didn't know. I felt like I heard about it, but I didn't think I really know about it. I thought it was like a joke that people make. But I mean, is that like a real thing that actually happened to him?
Another time, he was so broke, he sold his dog for $50.
Yep, that I know. And then
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and then once the Rocky became successful, he went back and bought back the dog.
Oh, really? Okay, yep. I didn't know that.
Yep.
So anyway, he was into boxing. He grew up in Hell's Kitchen, or he was born in Hell's Kitchen in New York, which had a lot of boxing gyms. In 1975, he saw the fight Muhammad Ali versus Chuck Wepner. Now, Chuck Wepner had a name. He was called the Bleeder. He was like, there was no way Chuck Wepner was going to beat Muhammad Ali. But it was like an amazing fight. I didn't see the fight, but apparently it was an amazing fight. And Chuck Wepner was bleeding all over the place. Muhammad Ali was pummeling him, but Chuck Wepner didn't go down. I think it went the fight, or it went 10 rounds, something like that. And he actually, at one point, Wepner knocked Muhammad Ali down. And Muhammad Ali hardly ever got knocked down. And Wepner thought he was going to win the fight. He said to his the coach or whatever on the side, "Hey, I think I'm going to win this fight. I'm going to win $1 million." And his coach said, "Well, don't look now, but I think Muhammad Ali's getting really angry." And then Muhammad Ali just crushed him. But Stallone was inspired by this fight. So in 3 days, he wrote the entire script for Rocky. And he figured, not only did he write the script, not only did he want to make this movie, he thought it would be a great movie, but he wanted to be the lead actor, even though other than that softcore film, he had never done any acting. So finally, he pitched it everywhere. Everyone rejected him. And finally, some movie studio offered him $300,000 for the script. $300,000. This is a guy who was so broke, he had just sold his dog for $50. But the studio said, "We'll buy the script, but we don't want you to be involved. We don't want you to be the director. We don't want you to be the lead. We don't want you to be an actor in it. We just want to buy the script." So he turned down the $300,000. The studio told him, "You're not an actor, you're a writer." So he could have built a career maybe as a movie writer, which, you know, there's sort of like this stereotype or this sort of this cliche that he's maybe not so smart, but he was offered to be, you know, a potential successful Hollywood writer. But finally, there was a studio that agreed to produce the film, but on a tiny, tiny budget. It was like the smallest budget to make a movie. So Stallone accepted the deal. He wasn't going to make any money on this. He accepted the deal, and he bought his dog back maybe for $75 or whatever or whatever, and he made Rocky. He was the lead. The film was nominated for 10 Academy Awards. It won Academy Awards for Best Picture, Best Directing, Best Film Editing. And then Rocky II was made. Rocky III, Rocky IV. Was there a Rocky V? I don't even know. Do you know if there was Rocky V?
Yeah, there was Creed and then Creed II. Yep.
Oh yeah, Creed. Right. So the whole series has grossed more than $1.25 billion at the box office. So he turned down $300,000 and he made some percentage of $1.25 billion. Then of course, he made Rambo. And, again, I don't know if I would have made that decision. I think I would have said, I think actually it's an abundance mindset to take the $300,000 and say, "Look, this is not my only shot at being the lead in a movie. I'll write another film." It's almost like a scarcity complex that made him not take the money, as weird as that sounds. So he just was persistent. He really wanted to be the lead.
Yeah, I wonder what makes him think that, like, okay, this was my last chance, you know?
Yeah, maybe he was so used to having nothing that he felt like he's never going to have a screenplay like this again. And so this was his last chance to make something of himself. I don't know. But he could have probably imagined he would have had a career as a writer. But here's a quote by him. "Don't be gullible. Use life before it uses you. Understand there are no free lunches, and for every action you take, there's a reaction." So maybe he felt like, you know, he was being gullible if he, you know, he had a vision, he had a dream, and, he didn't want to, there's only one life. And, you know, if he started just taking the money, maybe he felt that would turn into his life, just taking just taking the money. All right, let's see. Next, Mark Zuckerberg. So now Mark Zuckerberg, he had this little company called Facebook. And I remember this. This was in summer of 2007. He was offered so Yahoo tried to buy Facebook for $1 billion. And Mark Zuckerberg owned 25% of Facebook. He was 24 years old, and he would have made $250 million. Jay, if you were 24 years old and you could make $250 million, would you take it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, you know, it goes back to that. Like, if I'm 24 years old and you're like, hey, I'm going to cut off one of your fingers, I'm going to give you $250 million. Yeah, I would take it. $250 million is way more money than $1 million.
What about cut off your right arm?
Well, that maybe I would think about it. If you give me $1 billion, then maybe, yeah.
Well, what's the difference between $250 million and $1 billion? What are you gonna buy? What are you gonna buy if you have $1 billion, but you're like, oh, I only have $250 million. This sucks.
Well, see, if you think about it, $1 billion, you can found a company that makes like a cyborg arms, then you have a cool arm. So it's okay. A win-win situation.
Okay, but you remember we had that guy from the Impossible Labs. Remember that guy? Mick Ebeling. He makes prosthetic arms cheap. Yeah, he's a good guy. We should see what he's up to.
Oh yeah, I think I was there. I felt like I was there. I felt like I heard about his name, heard of his name before. Yeah. But yeah, you know, $1 billion, you can find a company that make you a cool set of cyborg arms, you know, and then that's your icebreaker out there. You know,
I mean, in the 70s, it only cost $6 million to get a bionic arm. The $6 million man.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, what can it do? Now, you know, my arms can do a lot more. My arms can be on my map, GPS, everything.
I always figure you'd have two problems if you lost your right arm. I can't write left-handed. Right. Which is the name of a famous song by Bill Withers about the Vietnam War. And he encountered a soldier who got his right arm shot off. And I can't write lefty. So I have to learn these new skills. Otherwise, maybe for $1 billion. I don't know. Maybe. So anyway, here's what happened to Mark Zuckerberg. Why did he turn down $250 million? So I had the opportunity to personally ask Peter Thiel on this very podcast. Peter Thiel was the first investor in Facebook. And now, don't forget, this was shortly after Peter Thiel had sold, he invested in Facebook kind of right after he sold PayPal to eBay. How much did he make when he sold PayPal to eBay? Well, Peter Thiel made $75 million. And Peter Thiel also would have made around, you know, $100 or $200 million. So this was a big deal. And they were all on the board. And Peter was telling me the entire board of directors was trying to convince Mark Zuckerberg to take the deal. And Mark Zuckerberg said, what would I do with $250 million? I would just write some code to connect people to each other and create a social network. Well, I've already got that. So I don't want to take the $250 million. And fortunately for him and Peter Thiel and everyone else who was an investor, Facebook is now worth, what, $800 billion? Let me just see. Hold on. What's Facebook worth? I mean, could you imagine turning down $250 million and now, yeah, it's worth $769 billion. So what's Mark Zuckerberg worth now? Let's see. I'm gonna use the Forbes list, even though I've shat on them in the past. Mark Zuckerberg net worth. $105 billion.
Oh. Wait, I thought, is he more? Is his net worth more than Jeff Bezos? I thought
Jeff Bezos is worth like $180 billion.
Oh, $180 billion.
And that's after he got a divorce. That's subtracting the money that went to his wife. It wasn't quite half, but it was a lot of money. His wife is not poor.
Yep.
Like, it's not like she got $10,000 and he kept $180 million. So, right. That was Mark Zuckerberg, and it worked out. He stuck to his vision. I guess he kind of figured that if someone's going to offer me $1 billion now, then I can always make some money later anyway. But next one, the one and the only, one of my favorite people on the planet, Jerry Seinfeld. So Jerry Seinfeld, he was offered, Seinfeld was the most successful TV show in history, And he did 9 seasons. And after 9 seasons, the ratings were high. I think like 100 million people watched, or 90 million people watched the series finale. Like, it was a big deal. Like, Larry David came back to write the series finale. They went out on a high. They were at their highest ratings ever at the series finale. And Jack Welch, who was the CEO of GE, General Electric, and General Electric owned NBC, which was the network that aired Seinfeld. Jack Welch said to Jerry Seinfeld, "Hey, I'll give you $100 million. Everybody, the public wants Seinfeld. They want a 10th season of Seinfeld. I'll give you $100 million if you do just one more season of Seinfeld." And Jerry Seinfeld said no. And so this came up. He was being interviewed by Howard Stern. And he said to Howard Stern, "Look, the public wanted more. But Howard, the public is not in show business. So you should do the opposite of what the public wants. There's a reason they are not in show business." So that's a very smart intuition, which is that if he had done a 10th season of Seinfeld, his intuition was there was no way it would have been good as the other 9 seasons. And part of his reasoning is that the public wanted the 10th season, and they wanted it so much that he had a feeling the expectations were so high, he'd have a feeling he would disappoint them, and everybody, you know, that would tarnish the rest of his career. It tarnishes artistic reputation. So again, artistic integrity saves the day. But he also figured, I mean, thing about Mark Zuckerberg or Jerry Seinfeld is they definitely had enough money when they were being offered the money. So yes, he turned down $100 million, but he probably knew that with syndication and everything, he was easily going to make several hundred million. And in fact, he's made over $1 billion. And so, you know, he made the right decision. And he's done a lot of other things. He's done a lot of other things with his career, including writing a single op-ed piece in the New York Times that completely trashed me. So that actually was the highlight of his career. The public wanted him to write that op-ed piece, and he did it.
And then we never hear about him anymore.
Yeah, now his career's over because everybody was like, "How could you write that op-ed against James Altucher? America loves James Altucher." And now
he's your best friend.
Yeah, now I can't tell that guy. I need a restraining order against him. He can't get away from me. So here's an odd one: Breaking Bad. So the writers of Breaking Bad, including Vince Gilligan, who created Breaking Bad. So Breaking Bad, you know, the TV show, was probably in the top 3 TV shows of all time, about a chemistry teacher who breaks bad and starts to cook methamphetamine after discovering that he has cancer and he wants money to leave to his kid and his wife. So anyway, Breaking Bad was offered, Jeffrey Katzenberg offered the Breaking Bad writers $75 million to make just 3 more episodes, and they turned it down. And I don't know how much money TV writers make, but I kind of doubt that they, as a group, that they had $75 million. That seems unrealistic to me. So, but they turned it down, and they turned it down for the most insane reason. So Breaking Bad had 62 episodes in total, 62. And Jay, did you watch Breaking Bad? I don't know.
No, I didn't watch Breaking Bad, even though I should.
Breaking Bad is a great show. But honestly, I've probably watched it 3 times, the entire series. But here's the thing. There's a reason why the show only had 62 episodes, is that the 62nd element on the periodic table is samarium. And this element, samarium, is known for treating lung cancer, which is the cancer that Walter White had. And so for Vince Gilligan, the creator of the show, symbolism was very important as part of his artistic integrity. So he turned down $75 million to keep... Nobody even knew that was the reason why there were 62 episodes. It only came out later. But he turned down the $75 million, which seems kind of insane to me, but that's the story. So I don't even know what to say about that. Like, I 100% would have taken... I would have just done, like, I don't know, sequels. Like even if oh, I'm not going to give any spoilers, but let's see who is next on my list of artists who have turned down money for, this is my list of favorite artists who have turned down money for artistic integrity. Macklemore, the rapper Macklemore. I first became aware of Macklemore when he did the rap song Thrift Shop. He's done many great songs, but Thrift Shop was sort of his breakout song that made him, you know, it won all sorts of awards and everything. But he was in, his career had gone for a long time before he had that breakout hit. And he, at first he tried to get, you know, all the record labels to sign him. It was hard to be an independent artist, particularly an independent rapper. But finally, though, he was getting enough acclaim, and this was still before Thrift Shop, but he was sort of getting known. And Jay, this one actually is going to be very important to you, this story, and I'll tell you why. Because finally, L.A. Reid, who's a big record executive, and he was a judge on X Factor, he ran a record label, and L.A. Reid called him and said, "I want to sign you." And Macklemore said, "Well, I'm not sure we want to be signed." But L.A. Reid said, "I don't even talk anymore. Where is your next show? Wherever your next show is, I'm bringing my entire team to go to the next show." And Macklemore was like, "Are you sure?" And L.A. Reid said, "Yeah, we're all going to the show. We're getting on a plane right now. We're going to go to wherever your next show is." And it did turn out that Macklemore had a show coming up in a few days. So it was in Missoula, Montana, your new home.
Montana, and, wow.
Yeah, and he was going to go, it was performing at the Wilma Theater in Missoula, Montana. So you know there's a lot of culture in Missoula. And L.A. Reid flew out, and he did try to convince Macklemore to sign with him. And Macklemore said, "No, I'm going it my own way." And then he released Thrift Shop, and the rest is history. He's super successful. There's also a really good guest appearance by Macklemore in one of my favorite TV shows, the show Dave. I watched it during the pandemic. It's on Hulu. It's about the rapper Lil Dicky. And it's a sitcom, but it's kind of about his life. And it was created by him. And there's a lot of good comedians in it, a lot of good performances. Anyway, Macklemore makes a guest appearance in that. But here's a quote from Macklemore. "I'm really happy that we did it independently. And we're going to continue to go that route. If there is something that makes sense, like I've always said, at this point, it completely remains independent. L.A. Reid was super cool. His team was super cool. It was really dope that an icon and legend like L.A. Reid would fly to Montana. That was just super humbling. But he turned down the money. He turned down the record label. Kept to his artistic integrity." And by the way, this is not to say that, you know, going with a record label does not have integrity. It's just in these situations, the artists felt that their vision could only be implemented if they go their own way and if they chose themselves. This is basically a choose yourself kind of episode. So next in line, my actual favorite comedian, or one of them, Dave Chappelle. So many people probably remember Chappelle's show, and Comedy Central offered $50 million for Dave Chappelle to do another season. And Dave Chappelle at first said yes, and they were all set to do the show. Neil Brennan was his co-writer. He was going to get some of that money. They all show up for the first day of filming. No Dave Chappelle. He's gone. He's completely missing. I think it took a few weeks to find him, and he decided to go to Africa, and he totally blew off Comedy Central and blew off the $50 million. He wasn't a rich guy. He even says on some of his Netflix specials, he had money, but not a lot of money, and certainly not $50 million. And, you know, the Netflix specials, he was happy he got them. This is, you know, in 2016, 2017, 2018, he got $20 million in a special from Netflix. So he got his $50 million, you know, 13, 14 years later, but he turned it down. And the reason why he turned it down was he was doing a lot of sketches on the Chappelle show, which it was sort of like a parody of racism. But he felt like people were taking the sketches too seriously and actually were being racist. So he thought that people were laughing for all the wrong reasons, and he thought he was contributing to racism with his show. And so $50 million couldn't convince Dave Chappelle to make more pseudo-racist sketches. So, and again, and then people thought this was like Neil Brennan did a whole special about how depressed he got. It was called Three Mics. It was a really great special on HBO. And, you know, but, and again, he wasn't writing racist sketches. He was kind of doing a satire of that, but he felt like people were taking it the wrong way. And boom, he went to Africa and now he did it my style, which is he just didn't even tell them that he was quitting, which is kind of the kind of thing I unfortunately do occasionally. So I have one more, which is probably the biggest amount of money I've ever heard of anyone turning down. But basically, ABBA, which I think might be one of the best-selling bands ever. Let's see, how many albums did ABBA sell?
I think they are the one, because you still have Beatles.
I feel like there's a Wikipedia page for all of this. Yeah, list of best-selling music artists. Wikipedia. Wikipedia is the best. So, yeah, the Beatles sold 600 million. And
ABBA sold half of it, I think.
Huh, Elvis Presley's number two with also 600 million. For some reason, I thought like Drake was on this list. Pink Floyd is like number 10 with 250 million. Led Zeppelin is 300 million. ABBA is, Eminem is 220 million. So he's the first rapper. Gosh, Rihanna is higher than Eminem. Anyway. And Drake's 170 million. ABBA's all the way down there. ABBA's 150 million. But there was a lot of tensions in the band. So they famously broke up. And I think it was in 2004, their old tour group or whatever, the company that put them on tours, offered them $1 billion for a reunion tour. And they said no. So because their music had a lot of resurgence. Like they had that Broadway show, or they still have it. It's Mamma Mia. And so their music had a big resurgence. So they know, I mean, they must have done the calculation, the people who offered them the billion, that they would make this money back. So they offered them $1 billion and ABBA said no. Let me see what ABBA said as a result. Hold on. ABBA rejected. Of course, there's a lot of stories of people like, you know, Tom Cruise turned down playing Iron Man. Will Smith turned down playing, you know, the Keanu Reeves role in The Matrix. But
those are different, right?
Yeah, those are just like, you know, you don't, it's not like it is an offer, but those guys were already getting huge numbers for every movie. So they just kind of have to decide which movies to do. And sometimes you make a mistake. Yeah. Sometimes you don't.
Most of the time they turned down the role because they just didn't think that the movie just wasn't any good or it's not going to be successful.
Yeah. 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 Right. So they have to take a gamble because they don't want it's not even about artistic integrity. They want to have commercial integrity. So if they do like a bad movie, they won't get as much money the next time. So Will Smith totally supposedly turned down The Matrix because, he didn't understand the script, which I get. It's a complicated script. So let's see. I want to see what ABBA. I thought I had it right here, but let's bring it up. So, ABBA turned down a $1 billion offer to reunite because it would involve playing 250 shows. That's, you know, I don't know. If I had to do 250 shows playing the best music in the world, I don't know if I would do it even for 10 billion. That's just that's because you know why? Because I just like sitting in my office all day telling me to go to 250 shows. Forget it. I'm not doing that for $1 billion. I don't need $1 billion to sit in my office, but
I can't even get you to do 25 shows.
Yeah. I can't even do 25 podcasts in my office, let alone 250. So, let's see. They said, they said no. We said no because they wanted 250 shows. It was incredible. No chance. No chance we would have done it. So, I think also, I don't know if they really liked each other that much at that point. But anyway, that is 10, what is it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That's 8 artists who turned down a lot of money for artistic integrity. So I want to ask people, which one was the most incredible to you and would you have turned it down? And I'll tell you, for me, for some reason, the Jewel one sticks in my head. Like, she was living in her car, homeless, and only 19. So when I was 19, if someone offered me $1 million to do my dream, which is to sing, like, if, you know, if I was Jewel, singing music was her dream, I don't know what I've turned it down, because even if that first album's bad, I'll have $1 million. I could maybe, you know, some of it goes towards making the album, but then I would have had, you know, I could have relaxed a little bit instead of living in my car, and maybe I could have made another album. I guess she thought that she never wanted to sacrifice her artistic integrity. And, you know, when I write a book, I would say one time when I wrote a book, I sacrificed my integrity a little bit. I wrote the Wall Street Journal guide to investing in the apocalypse. Now, I had a good idea for a book, but they really edited it a lot, and they had someone else write on it. This was like in, I don't know, 2008, 2009. And I didn't really like it at the end. I am ashamed of that book a little bit. And so I would say that was the disappointment. But like, now I don't write a book unless I'm really feeling super strong that this book will has helped, the ideas in this book has helped me. Because I know if it helps me, then I probably, it's like what Jewel said, if it's entertaining to me, it'll probably, everybody could relate. We're all culturally relatable, and so it'll be entertained or will help others. So I guess, but I have to admit that there are times where I've probably sacrificed artistic integrity, certainly when I do, you know, more commercial things and so on. But I have two books coming out in February and March. This is not, I did not do this to advertise my books, but Skip the Line and We Got Answers, which is an audiobook coming out in March that I did with Charlemagne the God, who's the host of The Breakfast Club. And it's an audiobook. It's about racism, actually. And it's very good. And Skip the Line is, I think, my best book ever, but I'll cover that in another episode. But which one, Jay, which story was the most incredible to you that you can't believe turned down the money?
I mean, even though the Stallone one is only 300,000, I felt like that's a little bit more incredible because he has to sell the dog. I mean, I have a dog myself, so I can relate to that. And also, like, I can relate to, like, oh, I'd rather do it by myself, or I'd rather have involved in it rather than, you know, selling it away and not have anything to do with it. You know what I mean? Like, I always want to have control or involved in my own project.
Yeah, because if it didn't work out, maybe no one would hire him as a writer again. Yeah. So, but still, though, I feel like it's almost like a lack of confidence in your talent to turn down the money because you think this is your one chance. Like, it's almost a scarcity complex. But, you know, they were young. They were broke. They, you know, one thing I know is that when I didn't grow up with money. And when I first had a job in New York City, I was dead, dead broke. I had no money. I lived in one room with another chess player from Washington Square Park. It was a one-room apartment. I slept on a mattress on the floor. He slept on the couch, and it was $300 a month, and that's all I could afford. My salary at HBO, I had no money coming into it, but my salary was $40,000 a year, which, I don't know, after the taxes are taken out, is $2,000 a month. So there was no apartment in New York City I could afford. I couldn't even afford $300 a month. So I would eat like one meal a day of ramen noodles. And I turned down a job at JP Morgan for double that because I wanted to work at HBO. But I don't know, if someone had said to me, hey, here's $1 million to write a book, but you have to write a book about flowers and it has to say flowers are bad, I don't know if I could have turned that down. I would have taken it, I think. So yeah. Everybody out there listening,
I mean, money is money.
Yeah, I mean, and then I would just write the next book. But anyway, everybody who's listening, tweet out what your favorite of these stories was. And if there's any big ones that I missed that you think are really interesting stories, let me know. I'm collecting stories of artists who turned down money, artists or entrepreneurs who turned down significant money because of artistic integrity or entrepreneurial vision. Thanks very much for listening to this. This is another episode of the My Favorites sub-series on the James Altucher Show. If you like this, oh, please, I would really appreciate if you write me a review on iTunes. It really helps me out. Yeah, and check out my book, Skip the Line, coming out February 23rd. I'm really proud of it. And it's about basically how to find your passion or even change passions anytime in your life and skip the line so you can be successful as quickly as possible. There's no BS in the book. I hate BS self-help books. This is all techniques that I've personally used, and I've changed my career at least 5 or 6 times, like completely changed it. But I'm going to do an episode about some of this stuff soon. Thanks very much, everybody. Thanks, Jay, and talk to you soon.